Hello everyone, welcome to Tapibara. Niemand hat die Absicht, Bargeld zu digitalisieren. A talk about the Chaos Event Mega Knowledge Camp, where they created an innovative digital platform to have digital payments at the bar, held by Q, who is a researcher at Max Planck Institute for Informatics in Saarbrücken. Have fun.
So, yes, hello everyone. We are here to talk about everyone's favorite topic, capitalism. Yay! And the Chaos event we held for the first time last month in the Saarland, Saarland's first Chaos event, also yay! in which we had a begin marketing talk, innovative digital payment system and marketing talk. And that is all the marketing talk that will happen during this presentation. So, probably wondering, who is this creature standing in front of you? I'm Q. By day, I work at the Max Planck Institute for Informatics in Saarbrücken. As said, I break the internet in fun and interesting ways, and in my increasingly limited spare time, I run Glaucus Digital. But, of course, we're not here to talk about any of that. So, let's talk about some motivation for this project. Why does this project exist? What were we trying to achieve with it? So, yes, we had a Chaos event. Mega Knowledge Camp, it went off rather well, little small, but everyone likes a small, cozy event sometimes, and we will probably be running it next year. So a little bit of advertising here. Come to our Chaos event next September. And, of course, the most important thing at every Chaos event is that we have a bar. You cannot have an event without a bar. And unfortunately, we live in a capitalist society, so we would like to receive money for our goods and or services. This can present a bit of a problem at a bar or any event for that matter. Namely that cash is annoying and card payments mean dealing with Americans. since the start of this year has become an increasingly problematic thing to be doing. We would also have to pay processing fees, but our primary motivation for this was we did not want to have to deal with the American card networks, because even if we used a European bank for acquiring and someone was paying from their European bank account to us, then it would still have to go through Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and then it would involve America. And that's not exactly ideal. There is the option of Girocard, but Girocard is a meme. So what's the solution to this? Obviously, we're engineers. So we have to over-engineer the solution until we build our own complete contactless payment system with blackjack and hookers, no less. So what is how does one build a payment system? Step one, build a bank. Very simple first step. I'm sure all of you can build a bank probably by tomorrow. How exactly does one build a bank? With the Pretix plugin, of course, because we're running a Chaos event, so this is running on Pretix, so all of the cash is already going through Pretix. Pretix is relatively well set up for keeping track of money, orders, and who owns what, and who owes everything. So it's simple. This also means that then on the order page, this is grayed out because this screenshot was taken after the event, but on the order page, one could then order vouchers for the bar, i.e. prepay via bank transfer, because bank transfers can take a few days to go through, whatever. But then one could not involve any of this card payment nonsense and then use this contactless payment system with their bar vouchers that they had pre-purchased along with their tickets. So how was this actually implemented? Well, given the need of this was to avoid using cards, we effectively built a card network. When one purchased a voucher for the bar, then a wallet was created with a wallet number, a balance, transactions, and a way to charge it. This is a very, very stupid, simple ledger and would definitely not pass audit of any financial institution, but that's fine. We're not a financial institution. We're a Chaos event. These things are very different for now. So, great. People will place an order. They then get created a wallet for them with a number, and their money that they placed the order with the voucher for is put in that wallet. How do people spend this money? Because it's great taking money from people. I'm sure we'd all like to just take money from people. But in the ideal case, people would like to receive something for that money, or they would never give you money in the first place. Capitalism at work again. So, step two, give creatures their vouchers. They have bought their vouchers. They would like to receive something for their money. How do we give that to them? Our obvious answer, put things in Apple Wallet or Google Wallet or whatever wallet choice, wallet app of your choice, because this is what everyone basically has and is fairly convenient for most people to use. So then, as you would normally do with an event, you then get this wonderful wallet pass in Apple Wallet with a barcode. And this barcode is both your entrance to the event and your way to spend your money that you have prepaid for at the bar. But yeah, isn't that just the event ticket? But that barcode does look a little funny. What's going on here? Normally this is a QR code out of Pretext. There's something special going on here. And here is where the fun starts. This is actually a train ticket. So you thought you were coming to a talk about digital payments. Ha ha, psych, no. This is, once again, Q talks about trains. So... To provide a little more context for this, a train ticket is can be described in a fairly simple way of data about what journey you have paid for, and then a signature over it to certify that this is actually what you have paid for and not just something you've made up. Like, hey, yeah, ticket inspector, honest, I paid for this ticket. Well, no, there's a signature over it, so you can check. There is a standardized format for the envelope that contains the signatures, which includes such things as, like, you know, where's my their version number, who signed it, so in this case the ASTA of the technical university, the key ID, so key one, we only had one, which algorithm it was signed for, in this case ED25519, and then, yeah, obviously the signature passes. But that's basically the outer layer of every train ticket, is just who signed it, using what key, what algorithm, and what is the signature, and then a load of binary data inside. And instead of the normal train ticket data that we'd be put inside, we put two different records inside of it, because this envelope just contains a series of records. In the first one, this pretext data record, we have all the stuff that one would need to verify a pretext order for checking into the event. So we have the order ID here, the order time, the event that it's for, the actual item that was purchased, so 2083 in this case is normal entry ticket, the variation ID, which is the student discount variant, attendee name, and this one special, we might talk about that later. And then the second record is the wallet record, which is for spending the money that one has purchased, so when one purchases a voucher, the wallet is created, associated with the account that placed the order. And then whenever that account downloads a barcode, this wallet record is additionally added with the wallet number in it so that it can be spent at a bar. Now, you may all be asking, okay, this is all great and all, and we love a bit of digitalization in our lives, but not everyone has an iPhone or a Google phone with the respective wallet app, nor wants to use them even if available. Well, that's fine. It's just a barcode. So we also had this option for printing out barcodes on this little cute cat printer in case people wanted a physical barcode, in case, I don't know, their phone was dead, they did not wish to use the digital option. So digitalization does not always mean that it has to be stuck inside a phone. It can just mean you do stuff like this. So then step number three, how does one actually pay for it? It's fairly simple once you have these two parts. You have placing an order and exchanging money for some credit on a wallet, and then you have giving people a signature or an attested access to that wallet. Fairly simple to wire these two things together with a bit of cryptography and one API request, and then you get to this, which, can I play that? So here we have the barcode, and you scan it, and then this interface pops up with the wallet balance, and then you can charge it at the bar. This, once you've done all the crypto and unpacked all of this is the fairly simple get wallet ID, how much balance is on this. Cool, that's enough balance. Charge €5, send, and then put an item in the ledger. This is fairly simple ledger operations. But I was promised contactless. Where's the contactless in this? This is just some barcodes. So step four, this is where it gets funny. The value-added services protocols of Apple and Google. Now, this is not a particularly well-advertised feature, but you may have seen this, for example, if you have bought a ticket from, for example, Ticketmaster, where you get this pass in your Google or Apple wallet that, instead of having a barcode on it, says hold on to reader device or just has this little contactless icon at the top. This means that then the contents of this pass is transmitted over NFC instead of visually using a barcode. Now, this would be really convenient because then people don't have to bother with scanning barcodes. If they have it in their wallet, they can just hold their phone to the card reader as they would their normal payment card at a bar, and we can create an experience that is almost identical to paying with their bank card. Apple is very restrictive about this. Specifically, that adding NFC to a pass requires a special entitlement issued by Apple. For more information, see near-field communication and getting started with Apple Wallet. One submits this form, the usual response is complete silence. Because, of course, Apple like their technology and they like protecting access to their technology because that's what allows them to charge so much money. But that doesn't sound very Digital Markets Act compliant. We're in the EU, right? We have this wonderful law that lets us do what we want with our devices. So, sure, let's submit a request to Apple saying, hey, give us access to this protocol under the Digital Markets Act. We have reviewed your submissions and determined that the request falls outside the scope of Article 6.7 of the DMA because the functionalities you seek are not features that are accessed or controlled by iOS or iPadOS. What? This is a feature of the phone and you're claiming that it isn't? Unfortunately, the DMA provides absolutely no appeal mechanism if the gatekeeper, in this case Apple, decides that they are not actually features of the phone. So, complain to the European Commission. Haven't received a response yet. That's great. Google Smart Town. Google, weirdly, is slightly nicer about this. They have no such silly restrictions on who can make use of Smart Tap. If one has a Google Wallet Pass, one can add Smart Tap to it fairly easily. There is still, regrettably, an NDA. Google let me sign it so I could see the protocol for doing this. But the NDA only covers the protocol for communicating with a phone. It does not cover actually using this. So if one wants to use someone else's reader to do Smart Tap, then one does not need to sign an NDA. One only needs the NDA to implement the value-added services protocol. At this point, we also have to give a thanks to Cormacs and their reverse engineering of the Apple and Google VAS protocols, because this project would not have been possible without such reverse engineering. So briefly, how do these protocols work? It's all over ISO 7816-4, which is the normal NFC card communication with lots of BERTLV, so ASN1-like, and some NDEF, because Google felt like some NDEF. It starts with a select OSE VAS 1, which is OSE is kind of an EMV thing to say this is not an EMV environment and we want to be doing something else. EMV is what your bank card implements. Then you get back a file control information in response to this, which contains a key of either Apple Pay or Android Pay, which tells you whether you're talking to an Apple or Google phone. And then that's all that's in common between them. Every other part of the protocol is completely different. So Apple's protocol is fairly simple. The phone gives its protocol version, some other bits of data that is basically useless and not actually used and can be ignored. Then you give a get data with the SHA-256 hash of the pass type ID. So, you know, pass.com.blah, blah, blah. SHA-256 hash that, send that. And then the response has the public key fingerprint, the device ephemeral public key, which it generated during this exchange, and AES GCM encrypted data containing the device's timestamp and the payload you wish to transfer. Then you do EC Diffie-Hellman and an X963 key derivation function, and then undo the AES and get the parse data. Really not much to it. It's just throwing a bunch of cryptographic primitives together and one command response. All of this can happen after the fact as well, so you don't even need the private keys to be held on the reader device. You can ship off the encrypted payload somewhere else for it to be decrypted. Google's is a lot more complicated. The phone gives a whole range of protocol versions it supports. It also gives a device ephemeral key a nonce. At this point, the protocol switches from BERTLV, so ASN1-like, to NDEF for reasons inexplicable. The terminal then sends its nonce and ephemeral key and signs this nonce and ephemeral key with the merchant ID and the merchant's private key. So then the merchant's private key needs to be on each terminal because it needs to authenticate itself every time it does a transaction. There's a sequence number in all of the exchanges in an attempt to catch someone injecting commands in between. Like if you see a terminal authenticate itself and then try to shove yourself into this protocol, then this is supposed to catch it. It's not actually that effective at it because it's just a sequence number. Then get smart tap data with the type of pass wanted. So not the specific ID of the pass wanted, but just like, I would like a coupon, I would like a loyalty card, I would like an event ticket. Then the data is returned using the EC Diffie-Hellman keyed of the, you know, the two ephemeral keys that we attested to earlier with AES counter mode this time. Pick a different AES mode, why don't you? And a different key derivation function. But you know, there are some similarities here, but the protocols are all completely different in their actual implementations because both of these were developed independently by teams who did not speak to each other and do not believe in open standards. So putting that all together, you then get this, which hold the phone next to the reader. It does its exchange, goes green, and it pops up exactly as if someone had just scanned the barcode. But in this case, you have all the convenience of a contactless payment using your phone. So I would like this myself. You want to use this on your event, whatever. There are two Pretix plugins. The first one is the bit that generates these special barcodes that are secretly train tickets. The second one is the bit that keeps the ledger of wallets and allows one to sell vouchers that correspond to credits in that. And then there's these three GitHub repos. The dot is the hardware that runs on the reader. The server is the bit that manages all of these and communicates this back to the machine. And then the Pretix Wallets register is the web browser software you run on your machine at the bar to actually do the transactions. This is also hosted at glcax/pretix-wallet because it's just statically compiled JavaScript that can be shoved up and installed as a PWA if one would want. It's not particularly tied to any Pretix instance. And I believe that is everything we have to discuss, and I expect questions.
Nice implementation. I have a question. I'm not very fit with technology. I don't have a smartphone or anything like that.
Yes.
Instead, I only got a Flipper Zero. And is it possible to make it scan an NFC tag coming from a Flipper Zero and pay to the bar using Flipper Zero? Because, again, I don't have a smartphone or anything else like that.
So, yes, it would be possible to do this, actually, especially in Apple's case, because their protocol makes no attempt to authenticate either party in this. One could just implement it on your Flipper Zero and pretend to be an iPhone. In Google's case, it's a little more complicated, but the similar could be done.
So basically, what you need to do is in Pretix, next to the PDF and QR code, also add a .nfc file that you can import in a Flipper Zip.
Yes.
That would be
fun. One could do that. It wouldn't be difficult.
Hi. So what I was mostly thinking is, this is cool and all. Have you encountered any or could imagine any scaling issues if this was used at some major event like Congress, for example?
So yes and no. So the actual reading of each device is, of course, all it involves is the reader, which is an ESP32, and the phone. So there's not really scaling issues there because you just duplicate the compute power that's needed to do this. These readers then actually use DTLS with COAP, so the Constrained Application Protocol. So they require very, very little bandwidth to send the actual read data. It's probably like 32 bytes or so per tap to actually send it back to the server for processing. So that's not that difficult to scale. One needs semi-reliable internet to make this work, but this does not require, it doesn't require an outside internet connection. It just needs to be able to talk internally. One can host the prefix instance that keeps track of wallet balances internally as well. That needs to handle HTTP, which is a bit more of, it's a bit more complicated to handle HTTP than COAP. One could implement COAP on the prefix wallet ledger as well, so then the cache registers can speak an equally lightweight protocol there. The biggest thing will just be number of transactions people want to do at the bar versus throughput of putting things into the database. Most databases can handle hundreds of thousands of inserts per second, and I don't think we'll be doing hundreds of thousands of transactions per second unless we suddenly scale to the size of Visa or MasterCard. So I don't think we'll have much problems beyond running a single Postgres instance and a few HTTP clients even at the largest of events.
I mean, I just have to think like something, chaos events and their chunk sales.
Yeah, well, depends how much chunk people want, exactly. What is the GDP of a chaos bar when the chunk orders come out?
I don't know, just ask Vanu.
So you mentioned that this would not be financially anything and that chaos events are not currently banks.
Yes, not currently being a key word here.
What is the boundary that separates the two from a legal perspective?
Okay. This is a difficult question to answer. So this is not legal advice. If you are in any way concerned that what you are doing is approaching being a financial institution, please ask a lawyer. However, the general rule is that if it is accepting money from customers and then letting customers spend this money with the same entity that accepted the money in the first place, it's not a bank. As soon as you start involving moving money between different organizations, then you may constitute a financial or e-money institution.
Okay, that makes sense. So something like the hack they pulled at Y, where the bar and the bar and the Mate Mart next door are technically separate entities, would potentially cause issues here.
That would at least need someone to look over the agreement there.
How is this combined with an existing cash register? Is it just like the person paid with cash, or is there something more to it?
So the other thing we were wanting to avoid here is getting out of the Kassensicherungsverordnung, which is this annoying German piece of legislation that says you need an expensive HSM on every cash register to log all transactions. We spoke to our tax advisor about this, and they basically said, as long as the payment and recording what people paid for are kept separately, then it doesn't apply. So we had a notebook in which we wrote down what people had paid for, and then we typed in the sum, and that was charged. So it basically works the same as if you had a cash register and then clicked card, and then it says, okay, total €26, and then you type €26 into the card machine. But one could integrate them further.
Considering that everything is prepaid,
yes,
that feels a little bit not very flexible. Like,
so okay,
how was that handled?
I didn't mention this because this was mostly a talk about the technology. But if someone came to the info desk and handed over, say, €50, then we would add that to their balance. Like, we weren't saying you had to pay in advance of the event for everything you would spend for at the event. It was merely we were separating the handling of cash from the using it at the bar. And if someone had SIPA Instant and SIPA Instant it does during the event, then we would also add that.
And if you had too much at the end of the event, could you get that
back? Then we just send it back via bank transfer or take the cash out of the info desk.
Yes. Question. I understand that you are not in the business of operating a bank here, and I know the business is the boundaries are a bit fuzzy. But say, for the sake of argument, you wanted to make an event for a bank for an event of 20,000 people for a 4-day event.
I have no idea what you're planning here, but I'm concerned.
At what point do you have to follow the Basel III regulations when it comes to dealing with such large volumes of money?
Unfortunately, I know these regulations, so I can actually answer that question. It would never apply at that scale. You would have to be dealing with a country's worth of money for the Basel regulations to apply.
All right, thank you.
Any further questions? We still have 3 more minutes. Okay, doesn't seem like it. Then give another warm round of applause to Q, please. And thank you for the talk.